Hey everybody, what's going on? What are you doing peeking
Man,
in looking, the video
I,
next
I was
door?
I seeing the other video.
I was seeing what's going on over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as soon as it comes on, he's always like,
"Move this over here."
He's always like hanging out in the
move
other
that
video.
Over here.
That joke never gets
old.
Because it just amuses the shit out of me.
Because
thinking about
like.
You like popping over into the next
yeah.
video, like on the YouTube.
Yeah.
Zach says, so fun fact, the main actor from this episode is a dude called Johnny Alonzo, and I've talked to him on Instagram a few times. He still looks the same. Awesome
yeah.
dude. Yeah, he seemed like kind of a cool dude. I actually liked him in this episode. I don't know why we didn't do this episode before, because this is actually a really good episode. I keep forgetting, like, how
the
good
actor
this
episode. Or
the actor.
Yeah, okay.
The guy that plays
guy
Mike.
Guy that plays Mike, okay, yeah.
Quote, unquote.
Yeah.
Which I guess is not really his name, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But, yeah, because I feel like we just watched it, like, a month or two ago.
Yeah.
And then, for some reason, we ended up doing another episode, and I don't know why. Because I actually really like this
episode. This was a good episode, and it was a pretty good case. It kind of struck me as plausible, most of it. Kind of like a bad house, like, you know. But this one actually had some objects that moved and apparitions, you know, it just sounds like something that could have happened. I don't know if it did, wasn't there, but it just kind of sounds plausible.
But it's pretty creepy.
Yeah.
I like this one. This one's kind of like distinctive, I guess,
yeah.
because there was like the whole depression thing and that,
yeah.
which you didn't really see in a lot of them. Oracle says, hey, Tom and Jenny, hi.
What's
and
up?
Pookie, wherever her fuzzy
Pookie,
butt happens to be.
She's
around here somewhere.
Yeah.
She, as soon as I came home from work and walked in the front door, she was standing right there like, Mama, because she was like so sad when I left this morning. She was sitting on my desk because I was like, before I left for work, she fell asleep on my desk and she was like, and then I was like, oh, I gotta go. And she's like, no. Yeah, she doesn't like me to leave, but you know. Zach said, also, there's a most popular songs from each decade video series doing the rounds. I saw the one for the 70s, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say I think I'm a Bee Gees fan now. Why is
yeah,
that embarrassing?
Bee Gees,
the Bee Gees are good,
yeah, they're good.
I know it's, like, kind of cheesy, and, like, you know, maybe
yeah.
it's cool to, like, shit on them or whatever, but they were actually, like, a really good band.
I remember how popular they were when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And now that shit was new.
I didn't like them when I was younger, because I was like, ugh. But then, like, I guess, like, the older I got, like, the more I appreciated them.
I had no choice but to like them, because my mom was playing them in the car wherever we fucking went. You know, it was on the radio constantly, along with a bunch of other shit. But that shit was so, you know, was that with Night Fever?
Night Fever,
yeah, that
yeah,
should be
that
going.
That was just
in.
The one that I was thinking
Yeah, there's
of
all kinds of stuff, yeah.
Zach said, I just never knew they were brothers, or British, or white.
Didn't know they were white?
They're about as white as you can get.
Yeah.
And they have that big, like,
yeah.
that big poofy hair. Which actually kind of, like, it's so cheesy that it almost kind of, like, comes around and is cool again, I thought. You know?
It was just music of its time. It was good.
Yeah.
It was ABBA. As
yeah.
stale as it was still good.
Yeah.
They were boring.
Well, yeah, but I mean, now that we've had all of this time to kind of reflect on it,
yeah.
it's easier to appreciate stuff when it's not constantly like playing
yeah.
you know what I mean. I think you can get more of an objective
yeah
you know listen to it.
Village People were fake. Blondie was good when that went disco. It came out with Rapture, but then all the other rock stuff that she had was good. You know, it was all good. So I became a big Blondie fan over times.
Yeah, really.
There was
Blondie.
It was good music the 70s. Yeah,
yeah, there was a lot of it. There
yeah.
was a lot of it. All right, so before we get too much into, yeah, Zach said, I always heard Staying Alive and assumed it was a bunch of black chicks singing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I guess because we grew up with it, so it's like we always knew what they
yeah,
looked
we knew
like.
What they were. Yeah, we knew what they were.
So, you know, so it didn't, I never had that.
If you like that
experience.
Shit, man, if you like that shit, watch that Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band, Sgt. Pepper's movie. Isn't that what it's called? Sgt.
Yeah.
Pepper's movie. It was like a rock opera. Nothing.
It's like kind of terrible, but also
yeah.
kind of awesome at the
yeah.
same time.
And starring the Bee Gees.
The Bee Gees and Peter
yeah.
Frampton.
Yeah.
And Alice Cooper.
Yeah. And it's the Bee Gees doing...
And George Burns.
Yeah. It's the Bee Gees. It's like a big, long music video. All right.
Yeah.
Of a Beatles album. And the
oh,
Bee Gees,
and Aerosmith. They're in
and Aerosmith's in it.
Aerosmith in it.
And so is Alice Cooper. And the Bee Gees are playing the good guys, and they're doing fucking Beatles covers. You know?
Yeah.
And then the bad guys all do Beatles covers. It's like a rock opera.
Yeah, they pretty much shoehorn all of the songs from. They're not all from the Sgt. Pepper's album. No. Some of them are like from other. They kind of shoehorn it into this plot.
Yeah, they just make a narrative out of all these.
Oh, and Steve Martin is in it. I forgot about that. Yeah, yeah, Steve Martin. He does Maxwell Silverhammer.
Yeah.
That's actually like a really good part of the.
Yeah. See it high.
It helps.
Yeah. But it's good music. It's like a big, long Beatles tribute music video.
Oracle said it's a jukebox musical. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like, for a long time, I really liked it growing up. And then when I got older, I realized that everyone else thought it was terrible. And I was like, oh, well.
They know what they're talking about.
But now I'm just like, you know what? I don't even care.
It aged well.
It did.
We watched it recently and fucking loved it.
And it's like not even a guilty pleasure because I'm not guilty about it.
We were drinking and fucking singing along with the Bee Gees doing Beatles covers and shit. And then Alice Cooper doing a Beatles cover. And
yeah, I think he did Because. I think that was the song that he did in there.
And like Aerosmith.
Aerosmith did Come Together.
They did Come Together. Yeah, that's right. That is a cover.
Yeah, they're all Beatles songs.
Yeah, it's a Beatles song. But they had that on one of their albums, but they did that cover.
They did it for that movie. And George Burns does, I think he sings Bing for the Benefit of Mr. Kite.
Yeah.
And maybe a couple other ones. I can't remember. It's been a while since I found it. So before we get into the ghost stuff, I just wanted to give a shout out. I don't think he's here, but I wanted to give a shout out to Dermot, who sent me a Amazon gift card so I could rent Barton Fink, the Coen Brothers movie. So thank you very much for that. I haven't seen Barton Fink in a really long time. Like, I rented it. I don't think I saw it in the theater, but I rented it a long time ago, like back in the 90s when it came out. And I think I had it on tape, like I pirated it. So I watched it a couple times, but I haven't seen it for probably like 20 years. So, you know. All right. So let's talk about hidden terror. Why necessarily hidden terror? I don't really know, like, why. Why is it hidden?
Because you can't see it.
But they did. Invisible. But he did see it, though.
Yeah, it kept popping out.
He did see. The titles of these don't make any sense to me. I was like, it's not hidden. He saw it. It's right there.
It's randomly generated.
It's an apparition.
They're randomly generated. They just got to put a title on it.
They're just like, whatever.
It's terrible. It's terror. Scary. You can't see it.
Scary terror.
Hidden terror.
Scary terror would have been better.
Yeah.
I see. I kind of feel like this one, they should have leaned into the whole depression or like unexplained sadness thing, because to me that was like the most distinctive part of this episode, like what I always remembered about
it. What she's talking about is that they seem to be experiencing what we call in the paranormal world oppression.
Right.
Where it's not possession. It's just something on the outside fucking with you. Like it's watching you. Which is kinda like what that house that me and Eric were in after we got out of the army. You know, which is very different from Mammoth Mountain, which was poltergeist, and it was just a like oppression. But we never saw anything; it never moved anything. It was just weird presence, a heaviness. It felt like it was weighing down on you. It felt like it attacked me one time, but there was nothing there.
This one, I feel like moved some stuff, but
yeah.
This one was a lot of, there was like a lot of objective stuff that happened, and people, like several people did say that they saw apparitions, and there was like noises and stuff, so there was like some kind of poltergeist type activity, like especially like noises and things, but apparitions was like the main thing, and like moods.
Yeah.
Like you said, kind of like your bad house that you lived in.
Yeah.
Zach says, Johnny, who's the actor who's in this, has the most early 2000s hairdo on this show. Yeah, that he definitely does. And believe it or not, he's still rocking that style today.
Hey, you trademarked that shit.
That's right. I mean, you know, more power to him. More power to him. So poltergeists are not actually ghosts. No. Yeah, we've discussed that a lot.
It's RSPK, recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis. Yeah.
Coming from a living person.
Yeah, but it's a subconscious mind.
That's our theory anyway.
Right. Well, it's not our theory. I'm just saying. It checks out with what I observed. And that theory has been around since the 1960s. Came out of some of the parapsychology departments, I think, of UCLA, I think is where they came up with that. Or at least that's, they kind of made it famous.
Yeah, and to, like, that makes more sense to me than, like, people farting around, like, after they die. You know what I mean?
Haunting, ghosts, and shit like that seems to be another phenomenon. Now, it may have some of the effects, like objects being moved, that might be, that's a poltergeist-like effects, but it seems to be a different phenomenon is a ghost. It's emanating from not a living person, but something that from a dead person, evidently, or a person that is currently located in another dimension, something like a spirit realm, or just like another dimension.
Crowley says, "Didn't the Beatles break up?"
Yeah, dude.
Several decades ago. Before I was born. Was it?
Yeah, they broke up and it became John Lennon went solo and then
Paul McCartney formed Wings. That's right.
Wings was good too.
And then Ringo did some shit. George Harrison did solo shit too.
So did Michael Nesmith. Michael Nesmith was from the Monkees.
That's the Monkees.
He did some shit too.
That's a completely different band.
He did one of the first video albums. It was called Elephant Parts.
Didn't they make that movie called Head? I think I remember seeing that when I was a kid. They used to show, for some reason, they showed the old 60s show, The Monkees, like back on MTV when I was growing up. Even though it was several decades old at that point. But yeah, so this story right here, Hidden Terror, again, which title doesn't make any sense. So the guy at the center of this, who this actor that we're talking about is playing. Now they're calling him Mike Speranza. I'm assuming that this is not his real name because he only appears in shadow. Here's the weird thing about this, though, is that he has a friend who also, you know, went to the house and, like, experienced some of the activity also, and her name is Sarah, and she shows up on the show with her face all and using her real name, presumably, so I'm like, he couldn't have been that worried about his hiding his identity because anybody that knew her and like knew that they were friends would know who that was, you know what I mean? Like the fact that she was just happy to use her real name and face on there, but he didn't want to. But you know, whatever. Maybe he just didn't want his face on TV. Like, you can't blame him. So I'm assuming that that's not his real name, even though his friend Sarah does use her real name when she comes on there later. So this happened in the autumn of 2005 in Corning, New York, which is, I think, is in upstate New York and is the home of Corningware. That's kind of what it's known for, like glass making and stuff. So Mike, I guess he's like in telecommunications or something like that, and he has a girlfriend named quote unquote Lisa Murray, which I'm assuming is also not her real name either, who is an artist. And they decide they're going to move in together, so they buy a house together that they said was like a good size house, but you know, it needed a little bit of renovation, but I guess like nothing too egregious, you know what I'm saying? But they liked it because the house was big enough for, you know, because Lisa worked at home and it's like she could set up a studio and teach classes and shit like that. So about a month later, after they, you know, buy the house and go through all that rigmarole, they move in and kind of start renovating a little bit. Now, the first thing that happens that's a little bit weird is Mike is kind of like prying off the baseboards like in the living room. And they start hearing something like rattling down the inside of the wall. And they're just like, what the fuck is that? Like, it sounds like it comes like from way up in the ceiling or whatever. And then this little marble, it was actually kind of like a big marble. What do they call the big marbles? Like when you play marbles,
a marble?
No, I mean, there's a word for it.
I don't know.
But I can't remember what it's called. Like if you play marbles, the big
marble. It looked like a pachinko marble to me.
But yeah, so it comes all the way like rattling down. Yeah, it comes out this
metal, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was like the little ball. It was just a little marble we played with kids, like a little cat eye marble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tammy said Corning is just a few miles over the Pennsylvania border. Oh, I'll be damned! I didn't know that. For some reason I thought it was upstate, but you know what the hell do I know? I've only been in New York City, so I don't know. But yeah, so this marble comes out of the wall, like this little hole in the wall. And they were just kind of like, they're like, they thought it was a little bit weird, like, where the hell did this come from and how it just kind of happened to come all the way down the wall and come out this hole. But they were kind of making joke about, he made a joke about, hey, it's like a housewarming present, like, from the house.
Yeah. When I first saw this episode, which is way over 10 years ago, it might have been 15-something years ago, that scene spooked me because it reminded me so much of, like, some of the poltergeists would do up at Mammoth Mountain. And, you know. It didn't do that, but I'm just saying that's the kind of thing a poltergeist would do. You could hear the marble falling down. You hear something falling through the wall and then, bonk, popping out of a little hole in the bottom of the wall that they'd pulled out. You know, I think it was a floorboard or something there, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were prying the baseboards off, presumably so they could paint or
whatever.
And
it came out through that hole. It was a little bitty marble. And I creeped out. I was like, man, that's that sounds like something that a poltergeist would do. And I which kind of lended credibility to the story. That sounds like something, it's hard to make up some shit like that.
And the weird thing about it, I'm glad that you said that, because in these episodes, sometimes stuff like that, that's kind of like ambiguous and not like overtly scary, is creepier to me than like really overtly scary. Like, oh my God, I saw a fucking apparition. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know why. I just feel like the ambiguity of it is scarier to me than like actually seeing a ghost in your face, like big as life.
Yeah.
I don't know why
that is. Drop a marble. And there's nothing in a wall really to make a marble bounce around. There might have been some little boards going this way, but I don't know. That's just kind of weird.
Yeah, so they, I mean, they thought it was weird. He said that we just kind of, like, laughed nervously at each other, and we're just like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then it seems like they weren't there very long before the shit started popping off, right? So one night, not too long after they move in, I guess they're both sleeping, and Mike wakes up. He thinks he hears, like, footsteps, or he was like, I was sure that there was somebody in the house, like, that there was somebody downstairs. He's like, it sounded exactly like somebody walking around down in the house. So he runs downstairs with his pistol, and he's, like, looking all around, and he can hear more noise, like somebody's down there, but there's nobody there. And then he's, and then there's, like, a jump scare where he kind of, like, goes to this door. It's like, oh, shit, oh, shit, like, and he opens it, and then, like, a shovel falls out or something like that. And I was, there's a lot of jump scares in this one. But, yeah, he's, like, there was absolutely, he's, like, all the doors were locked, all the windows were locked, everything. There was no way that anybody could be in there, but it sounded exactly like somebody was in the house. So a few days after that, Mike goes to work, and Lisa has her studio all set up, and she's, like, starting to paint or whatever. She says, I don't know, like, she wasn't on the show, so I'm not really sure, like, where they got her side of the story from, because, you know, spoiler alert, they break up at some point. But apparently she heard something or felt a presence or something. Like, the way they had it set up on the show was just her like at the easel, and then like she kind of felt something behind and she was like, what the fuck was that? Or like it was like creaking or whatever. And then she calls Mike up at work, and she's like, you know, she sounded kind of upset, and she was like, well, I just wanted to hear your voice. You know, I think something's wrong. And apparently she started feeling this overwhelming sorrow that she can't explain. Like, she doesn't know why she's sad. She just feels like she wants to cry, or, you know, like this overwhelming grief that she's having. So Mike, who's at work, is just kind of like, well, you know, just get out of the house. It's like, you know, don't sit around in there, and, you know, go get some fresh air, or go do something. Now, over the next week, he said, her depression gets like way, way worse, and she doesn't have any reason for it. And he said that she just felt like horribly, horribly sad, like just like someone died, like all the time, but for no reason. And as the months went by, it got to a point where the depression got so bad that she couldn't even like do anything. Like, she couldn't do any of her work. Like, she didn't even do any stuff around the house. Like, he would come home. There's a scene where he comes home and there's like dirty dishes piled up in the sink and shit like that. And she's like, I know what you're thinking. You know, I didn't do a goddamn thing all day. You know, she doesn't say goddamn, but you know what I mean. But
it's,
yeah, so
like, it's sapping her energy away.
Right. Like, she can't,
like a psychic vampire.
Yeah. Like, she's just like laying there on the couch all day and she can't like do anything. So she doesn't do any housework or nothing. Now, Mike does not get mad at her, but, you know, he's like, well, maybe you should, you know, go see a doctor or something like that. But she takes a lot of offense at this and gets, like, really upset. She's like, I don't need help. And she gets, like, really upset about it. Now, one night, not too long after this, Mike is in front of his computer, like, in his office, like, eating Chinese food or whatever. And he hears, like, it sounds like the door creaked or, like, the door opened or something like that. But he doesn't see anybody. Now, on the show, they kind of showed, like, a shadow go, whoosh, you know how they do when they want to like show you that it's like, oh, they said they felt a presence or whatever, but they didn't say he saw anything. So they just had like a little shadow like running behind the door or whatever. But he did say that he kept feeling when he was in the house that someone was always there like watching him. So like it felt like a really oppressive kind of feeling. And then they kind of jumped to this other scene where, you know, they're sleeping and he said he felt something on the foot of the bed, and then he sat up, and then there were, like, depressions on the bed, like someone was climbing on the bed, like it was their feet or their hands or someone was crawling on it, but you couldn't see anybody, obviously, which, you know, that would freak you out a little bit if that happened. Meanwhile, Lisa, the girlfriend, is getting crabbier and crabbier. And Mike finally asks, because I guess up to this point, because, you know, a few months have gone by and her depression's getting really bad, and I guess he's just, like, working and stuff. And I don't think that they've been communicating with one another about this haunting business that's going on. Because at this point, he finally asks her, you know, hey, when you're in the house by yourself in the afternoon, like, do you feel like somebody's in here watching you? And she gets mad at him again, I think because she took it, I mean, she seemed to take it the wrong way. Like, he was accusing her of being crazy, or maybe you feel like that. But he meant, he felt like that, and he wanted to know if she felt like that too. But she got, like, all upset, so he was just like, all right, never mind. You know what I mean? And Mike said that it wasn't just her. Like, he felt like he was getting angry for no reason. Like, he would just have, like, fits of rage and stuff like that and not be able to explain, like, what he was mad about exactly. Yeah.
That fits the description of what's called oppression.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it's kind of a weird phenomenon, or a real phenomenon. At Mammoth Mountain, the poltergeist event I was involved in as a kid, Wesley seemed to slightly be under the influence of fucking oppression. But either that, or that's just how he showed fear, because he really couldn't understand what was happening, him being deaf. And slightly autistic, too. It was weird.
Yeah, you said that he seemed like he was sleeping a lot.
He looked dead when he was asleep. You know, he looked real, almost catatonic. And then he was real tense. We go up the stairs together, had the feeling that there was something behind us. We'd run from it and get to the top of the stairs and turn around and look, see what it was chasing us. There'd be nothing there. And he felt it too. Every time we went up those stairs from the first floor to the second floor, we couldn't just walk up it. We had to, like, slowly just start running, like there was something chasing us. We'd look down, there'd be nothing there. Weird.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy.
Yeah. And he'd like laugh a little bit, like you felt it too. You know, I could tell. You know, his sign language wasn't even that good. You know what I mean? It was real vague. His language skills weren't that good. But he was like, you felt that too. I could read it in his body language, in his eyes. I said, yeah, there's nothing there. So I think he was being affected by it, but he was trying to block it out. As an adult, he said, no, that didn't happen. And Red was like, his stepdad was like, no, that did happen. And that scared him bad. He didn't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
He was trying to deny that happened.
Although, like I said, later on, he did kind of like...
In the book, he says, yeah.
He did write to me. And
right.
Say, or he at least told Lois, like, what happened, what he remembered.
I asked him about it, and he said it was a bad place. He said it was a place where there was an... He basically said it was where some kind of evil magician had a great career. That's what he said. That's what he wrote to me. That's weird that he said that.
Yeah, that's...
I know that was his imagination, but I know what he's talking about. It felt like something bad happened there. I don't think it was location-based. It was just an illusion. Because wherever I went, it's where it was.
Yeah, it just followed you. Because, like I said, I think it was you doing it.
Yeah.
Unconsciously.
It's a fake ghost made by psychic abilities. Telekinesis.
So, speaking of poltergeist stuff, one thing that Mike said happened all the time was that he was in the habit of, you know, getting the mail and kind of, like, leaving it on the, like, the table, like, next to the front door. And he said, so whenever he came home, it was always, like, scattered all over the floor. And he's like, that can't be happening like that all the time. And Lisa didn't do it, and it's just, like, so he couldn't figure it out. So he's like, he would always come home, and the mail was just, like, scattered all over the place, and he couldn't figure out why it was doing that. So because the mood at home is not good, I mean, Lisa is really depressed, and he doesn't really like being in the house either because he feels like he's being watched, so it's, like, a lot of tension and stuff. So Mike starts staying at work, like, longer and longer, so he doesn't have to hang out in the house all that long. Then there's a scene where Lisa, and I'm assuming it's afternoon or evening, and she's in the house by herself, and she's, like, in the bathroom, like, she just gets out of the shower. And then she's looks in the mirror, and she sees, like, a little ghost boy, like, in the shower, like, peeking around the shower curtain, which, you know, I guess she just saw it for a second. Like I said, she wasn't, the real woman was not on the show. So I'm presuming that we're...
Secondhand
account. This is just like a secondhand account. Maybe she told Mike at the time and like he's relaying like what she saw. But apparently it was like a little boy that she saw in the tub, like in the shower. So, as I mentioned, Mike is starting to dread coming home. It's like the, he said the closer he got to the house, like the more he would tense up. And, you know, inevitably every time he would come in the house, like the mail would be all over the floor and he's having to keep picking it up and piling it back on there. So one particular evening, he comes home and Lisa is sleeping on the couch. And again, she's been just like sleeping there all day and hasn't done anything. Now, she tries to, he's trying to like talk to her about this haunting. He's like, we need to talk about like what's going on in this house because it's affecting him as well. And I guess her coping strategy was just like pretending that there was absolutely nothing going on because she got would get really angry like anytime that he brought it up and was just kind of in denial about it, I guess.
I think that's part of the oppression.
Maybe it was, yeah.
She was in denial of what was happening to her.
But yeah, so he basically says, well, you need to get out of the house, you know, for your own well-being. And then she gets mad again. It's like, oh, what do you want me to do? Just like go out and have coffee with my girlfriends and all this other kind of shit just so I can be happy for you and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, I mean, you need to get out. You need to move out of the house, like basically. Like he wasn't mean about it, like at least on the show. He wasn't like, get the hell out of here. But, you know, he was basically like, and he said that he felt really bad about it. But he's like, man, she was like not having a good time in that house and he was just worried about her and like he was starting to worry about her and he's like, I just think it would be better like if you were not here, like if you got out of here because this house is obviously sucking all your energy out or whatever. But you know, he did think it was best for her even though he said he was really upset about it. Now at this point he pretty much admits to himself, okay, well the house is haunted clearly. So he starts putting on his webcam during the day because he's like, I got kind of, he's like, it was bad, but he's like, I got kind of curious about it. So he would leave his webcam like running, like recording during the day to like to see if he could catch anything going on because he was sure that there was something in the house. He also starts experimenting with the mail. He said, I thought maybe, you know, he's like, this is stupid, but he's like, maybe like some neighborhood kids were breaking in and like scattering the mail, like for whatever reason. But he's like, I couldn't really think of anything else other than paranormal shit. So he's like, so I thought to, you know, kind of preclude that possibility, he would leave like a $20 bill or something like that, like on top of the mail. He's like, so if somebody was breaking in and like doing that, then they would obviously take the money. But the money was never taken. So he's like, well, obviously something else is going on then. Now, he also, like I said, records the stuff on the webcam, but he never caught anything on the webcam, which actually, to me, and I was thinking this while I was watching the episode, I was like, that makes it seem a little bit more believable to me because you would think that
they would have lied and said,
that it's like, oh my God, we got like this door opened or something like that. But he's like, I didn't see shit on the webcam. Like he didn't get anything. Yeah. Like, there's just nothing unusual on there at all, even though he recorded, like, all day long.
Just the whole tone of this episode and the case made me, kind of gave me the feeling of credibility to it and authenticity. Just, like I said, it wasn't there. I can't vouch for it, but it just, it has a very authentic feel to it, based on my experience with what they call the paranormal. I'm gonna be the next announcer of this shit. And you know, I've had some weird shit happen to me fucking my whole life, you know, dreaming true, fucking having premonitions, out of body experiences, fucking near death experiences, poltergeist. I guess this was haunting at the bad house. Very mild haunting though. Weird sleep disturbances, you know, where I've dreamt I saw somebody in a dream and then said something to him in the dream, and then afterwards that person fucking remembered the same dream and I said the same thing. So I guess I'll call it dream invasion.
You guys were meeting up in the dream world.
Yeah. Yeah, weird stuff like that. So, and I think weird phenomena like that happens with a lot of people. I'm not the only one.
I've heard other people talking about that.
Yeah, it was just something about me, I guess, me and my upbringing. It was happening to me, especially when I was young, at a pretty regular rate. It was pretty regular. And I just accepted it for what it was. I said, yeah, people can do this. You know, but this one this case kind of feels authentic based upon my personal experience.
Well, and this was another one that I liked because they didn't call in the church. There's no exorcism bullshit. There's none of that kind of stuff.
It's just people trying to deal with it on their own, which that's what happened to us. We just tried to deal with it. We were afraid to call people, that they'd think us that we were crazy. We figured, man, if we call the cops will show up and all this phenomena will stop and we'll look crazy as shit.
Yeah.
Because that's what, because it was a prankster, you know. You just had to deal with it yourself.
But yeah, I tend to prefer the episodes where they don't get all like religious-y and stuff, where they're just kind of like, well, we're dealing with this, and then we'll maybe call the paranormal investigators.
Yeah,
and like sometimes when they bring in the psychics, it gets a little bit cheesy then too. But this one was actually not too bad.
The case always goes sideways when they bring in a damn fucking psychic. You notice that whenever they bring in a psychic, man, all of a sudden a narrative starts forming, and it's always hokey.
Although this one didn't really have that. They did bring in a sensitive, but they didn't try to like impose a story onto the shit. They didn't really try. So I appreciated that. Yeah. So I
what they use it as, oh, a long time ago there was a murder in this house. Oh, come on.
I mean, it'd be one thing if there was, you know, actual evidence of that happening, but there never seems to be, though.
No.
So it's just kind of like, you can just come in there and be like, yeah, this happened like 200 years ago, and oh, conveniently, like, all the records were lost in a fire or some bullshit like that. You know what I mean? So, but I do like that this one, you know, they said they got some evidence and stuff, but they didn't try to, like, impose a narrative on it, which was nice. So, so he doesn't see anything on the webcam. Now, later on, he's sleeping again, and he's woken up by, he said that he heard two arguing voices, I'm assuming like in his room, and he said that, you know, he couldn't make out everything they were saying, but he's like, they sounded like they were arguing about him, which he said that scared the shit out of me, you know what I mean? Which it would if you woke up and heard two disembodied voices arguing about what they were going to do with you.
He said he couldn't really tell what they were saying, he just thought they were talking about him. Which that also kind of sounds plausible. You know what I mean? I haven't seen paranormal shit. I did hear a voice, but I couldn't make sense out of it. It just sounded like gurgling water, and slightly, it sounded like it was backwards. It scared the shit out of me. I ran from it. That was later on.
The first time you told me that story and you did the sound, all the hair stood up on the back of my head. That was like a creep. If I heard that just like coming out of the fucking wall or whatever, I would probably shit a brick.
I jumped up out of the damn cot because I was, you know, they gave me a fold-out cot. I was staying at Lois's house. Jumped out of the fold-out cot, fucking grabbed the sleeping bag because I was in a sleeping bag, and fucking took out of there with a sleeping bag in hand.
Nope
the fuck out of there, because I ran into Lois and Red's room, threw that shit on the fucking foot of at the foot of their bed and climbed in there and said, "What's wrong?" And it says, "That thing's trying to talk. That thing, I'm not. I don't want to hear that thing talk."
Yeah, he's like, "I'm not interested in anything that it has to
that
say."
That thing was fucking trying to talk. And it was loud as my voice is right now.
I wonder what it was.
It started silently and it went up and got louder and louder. It's like, boom. It was like that. It sounded like it was underwater, bubbles and shit. Oh man, it was fucking weird.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah, I left Wesley in there. He was deaf. He couldn't hear it.
He'll be fine.
He'll be all right. He had been throwing clothes on me the night before, so, when I was in that sleeping bag out of the dresser. That was fucking weird, man. My fucking hair still stands up thinking about some of the how strong it got and the shit that it did.
Oracle said it's spookier without the hokey. I agree. I think stuff is scarier when there's like not really any context, you know what I mean? When you try to like, I think that maybe people try to impose a narrative on it like to make themselves feel better about it, because you're classifying it, you're explaining it, you're to some degree, but I don't know, to me like it's creepier when you don't know anything about it, when it's just kind of random. Pour one out for Wesley, poor dude.
He'd be all right.
He was all right. He's all right.
He didn't know.
He's fine.
It wasn't messing with him.
Yeah, it was mostly just
the only thing it did to him. And during that episode, during that those few days, is that he was autistic. He did funny shit. Okay, he'd stack up fucking mad. He had, you know, those little signet books. They're like a little small novels. Well, you could get Mad Magazine like that. And he had hundreds of those. And he'd have them stacked up all in order because they had numbers and shit. And he had a badminton racket fucking tacked to the fucking wall like it was a decoration. I don't think he really knew what a badminton racket was. And Lois was watching him in bed because shit was moving and he was asleep. And fucking, I just walked out of there about 5 minutes before. I was in the living room and Lois looked. I saw Lois and she looked at him and while he was in bed and he was all right. She was standing in a doorway and then she looked back in the living room at me. And then a few seconds later, she looked back in there again and she startled. She went, oh, look at that thing. And I ran, oh man, nearly caught my, choked myself. I ran over there to see what it was she was looking at. And it had taken the badminton racket off the wall and put it in a fucking jacket and a pair of pants and I put a baseball cap on it and made a human form next to Wesley in the bed with him.
Like in
fucking,
a second.
In a second. And my fucking hair, fucking, I had hair back then. My fucking hair stood up and I was like, no fucking way, look at that. Look at that thing. And Lois was like, oh, hell no. No, 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 no. And she picked all that shit up and threw it in the fucking corner or something. I don't remember. She's like, no, that didn't happen. It was that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what you would do.
Yeah, it was. I noped the fuck out. It made a human form and put a baseball cap on the badminton racket like it was wearing a hat. And the handle of it, it was down inside the jacket, you know? And then The pants were inside the base of the jacket. And it was laid out perfectly. And it did it like in a second. A couple seconds.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it could do fucking amazing things in a short period of time. I don't know how it did it. And he was snoring the whole time.
Yeah, but him. He was completely clueless.
There's no way he could have done it.
Oracle said, my big ghost experience was hearing a ghost play the pipe organ in a fully lit room. Not a full piece, just a quick riff like a warm-up. It freaked me out.
Oh, wow, yeah.
My friends just nodded and said, yeah, that's Dr. Louise Wright. Reportedly, she also enhances your performance if she thinks you need it, which is a very teacher thing to do.
You mean she gets your dick hard when you need it? Is that what you're talking about?
No, playing the piano. Oh, okay. Or playing the organ, rather.
Well, yeah, she can play on the organ. She's like the spiritual Viagra. Spirit go in there and fucking stiffen that shit up in a heartbeat.
Oh my God, it was like that scene from Ghostbusters.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Ray has that ghost like unzip his pants.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Zach said, you know, the only thing missing from Johnny's look in this show is if he had blonde highlights on the tips of his hair. Yeah, he did not have it. He had that kind of like shaggy 2000s look, but yeah, no blonde tips, sadly. And he didn't have a goatee. Wait, did he? He didn't have a goatee, did he? Or like a soul patch or something? Because those were very big back then. But yeah, so he hears these two arguing voices, like I said. And he thought they were arguing about him. So basically, like, yells, what do you want, at them. And then, you know, but then the voices stopped suddenly. So at this point, probably understandably, he starts, like, sleeping at his office. They show him, like, kind of curled up on this little couch in the break room or whatever. And then a coworker friend of his, like, comes in and brings him a cup of coffee or whatever. Like, hey, man, I don't know if he, like, explained, like, why he was sleeping at the office or whatever. And he tells the guy that, you know, the guy's like, yeah, you are right, or everything. He's like, you know, can I tell you something about my house? He's like, yeah, sure. He's like, I'm pretty sure it's haunted. And at this point, the guy's just like, yeah, right. Then he gets up and leaves. I'm like, gee, thanks, bud. Super supportive. So he's like, yeah, I'm not going to tell anybody about this shit anymore. But also, on the other hand, he kind of felt like he wanted to move. But then he was like, well, I don't really want to be chased out of my own house either. And he was still kind of curious about it. So one evening, he's like sitting on the couch watching TV. I don't know if he was watching cartoons or if he just like was watching something else and he fell asleep and then cartoons subsequently came on. But there were cartoons on. And he was sleeping on the couch. So he wakes up and he's like, oh, guess I gotta go to bed. He turns off the TV and he said that he saw, for a second, a little boy sitting in front of the TV. And he said that the little boy turned around and looked at him like, hey, I was watching that.
Yeah.
Like the little ghost boy was watching the cartoons. And he was kind of like freaked out. So he turned the TV back on, like for the little ghost boy to watch it. And so he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go in the other room. So he's going in the other room. And then he's like, later on, the TV turned itself off by itself.
Yeah, it's also kind of creepy.
That is very creepy. I mean,
it would sound like something that you would actually see in a haunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't some kind of a ghost rattling chains or, you know what I mean, or a ghost doing something that was epic. It was just a little kid watching TV.
He's like, I was watching a cartoon.
Just real mundane, you know. Hard to make up something like that. If they did make that up, that was brilliant.
Yeah, like I said, it's always scarier and more believable if it's nothing, if it doesn't have a narrative, and if it's kind of like more, like just regular
mundane shit.
Like, I don't, the ones that are just like demons going like, like, that's not scary to me at all. I mean, yeah, if it happened in real life, if I had a demon do that, yeah, that'd probably be scary. But I'm just saying, like, in a movie and something like that, it's not scary. Because it's just, it's too much. It's over the top. So yeah. Now, again, he's thinking, well, maybe I will move, because this is getting a little out of hand. So he's hanging out with his friend, Sarah. Now, the real Sarah was on the show, like I said, and she apparently used her real name, and she, you know, wasn't in shadow. So they're hanging out having coffee or whatever, and she said, yeah, we'd been friends a really long time. Now, he doesn't tell Sarah about the haunting at first, but he does tell her, you know, I'm thinking about selling the house. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, you just bought it. Like, you just moved in there. And he's like, well, you know, it's like, it needs a lot of work, like, before I sell it, and I can't really afford to do all the renovations, or I don't really have the time to do the renovations because I have to work so much, blah, blah, blah. So Sarah then volunteers. She's like, well, you know, I'm off on Mondays. It's like, if you want me to come over and, like, you know, help you paint or whatever, she's like, I can totally do that. So he's like, okay, well, that would be really cool. But he does not tell her that the house is haunted. And I think that he implied that he did that deliberately because he wanted to see, and this is kind of shitty, but he wanted to see if something would happen to her. So he knew that he wasn't crazy, like he wasn't just imagining it, you know what I mean? So he wanted to see if, like, the same thing
would happen. He used her as a control.
Right.
Wasn't going to tell her anything.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, she was a little bit pissed about it. We'll get into that in a little bit. So Sarah comes to the house on Monday, and he goes off to work. And she starts painting. She's got all the ladder and shit laid out. But she's not really there that long. She literally goes up on the ladder and just, like, one stroke of paint or whatever. And then there's, like, kind of like a shadow jump scare. Like, she sees, like, a shadow out of the corner of her eye or something like that. And then she starts feeling, apparently, the same overwhelming and unexplained sadness that Lisa had felt before. She's just like, I just felt suddenly like I, like somebody had died. And like somebody had told me that a loved one had died, and like, I just wanted to cry and I didn't know why. So, Mike calls to ask like how she's doing, and she sounds really bad, but she's just like, oh, I guess I just have a cold or something like that. But she's like, then she just like started crying like the rest of the day. And then she said, like, for 20 minutes, she just kind of, like, stood there, like, she couldn't move. Again, like, oppression, like we were talking about. And then she heard very distinctly, like, rustling on the drop cloth. Because they had, like, all that plastic drop cloth, like, around because they were painting.
Let me use this one. Let me get some of because we're out of vodka.
Oh, that's right. That's the last of vodka.
That's the last of vodka.
I'm going to have to get some more
tomorrow.
Or, like, before the Wednesday show.
That'll last us.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Like I said, I gotta work tomorrow. I don't need to drink a lot. But yeah, so she heard rustling on the drop cloth like someone was walking on it. And so she goes to investigate, and she sees kind of like a silhouette. It looked like in the bathroom kind of thing, and then there was like plastic hanging everywhere. And she thought there was somebody like in the tub, but then she pulled it and it was just like a coat or whatever. But then she said she heard really loud walking on the plastic. She said it was very clearly somebody walking very loudly across this plastic drop cloth. And she was like, yeah, no, I'm out of here. So she runs out of the house. She said that she felt very strongly that something very bad was going to happen if she stayed in there. So she just ran outside. So after this, they meet back up at the coffee shop. And Sarah tells Mike what happened at the house. And Mike is freaked out because the feeling of overwhelming sadness that she described, he's like, that's just like what Lisa said, like his ex-girlfriend. And Mike finally admits, I've heard and seen all kind of shit too in the house, you know. And Sarah was like, well, probably should have told me, like, before you let me hang out in there all day by myself. So thanks, bro. But, you know, she wasn't that mad about it. But I guess, I'd be kind of mad about it too. But he was like, well, you know, I hate to do that to you. But he's like, I had to know, like, if it was real. And I guess it is, because you felt the same way and I didn't tell you anything. So now Sarah is obviously kind of scared about this, but she is also kind of interested. So she's going to help him, like, investigate. So she's like, well, we need to call, like, some paranormal investigators or some shit. Some ghost hunters. So they call up this team, I think they were called Central New York Ghost Hunters. Oh, well, duh. Why did I think it was upstate New York? Because it says right there, Central New York. Jeez, I'm stupid. I wasn't paying attention. Okay, so I think it was called Central New York Ghost Hunters. And the main person was Stacy Jones, I think was her name. And then you had another guy named Kyle, who was like the videotaping guy. And then you have the psychic sensitive person, whose name was Regina. She was also on the show, like, for real. Actually, most of the team was on there, now that I'm thinking about it. And then they have another guy named James, who's like the EVP and photo guy. Now, they said as soon as the team got there, they heard very distinctive banging sounds upstairs and there was no one up there. And they said this was actually kind of a big deal for them because usually they're like, you know, when we get there, it takes like a few days for us to even see anything if we do see anything. So the fact that as soon as we walked in the door, like phenomena started, that was like kind of a big thing. So they go in the master bedroom and set up to do EVPs. So they ask Sarah to go up there, even though she's kind of shit in her pants. She's like, I don't really want to do this, but okay. But so they have her and Regina like go up there in the master bedroom, and Sarah has like the little tape recorder thing like around her neck or whatever. So they go in there, and Mike ends up getting called into work, and he's like, well, it might be better anyway because, you know, I feel like a lot of stuff doesn't happen like when I'm here. Like, it seems more responsive to just when women are alone in the house. So he's like, maybe you'll get more phenomena if I'm not here. So he left. So Sarah and the team are staying in the house. So they start asking all your kind of standard EVP questions, like, you know, what's your name? What are you doing here? Blah, blah, blah. And Sarah asks the ghost, are you sorry for scaring me? I'm like, I don't think that's a good question to be asking, but okay. Now, at this point, Kyle or the other guy, or James, one of the audiovisual guys, he goes out to the car, like, for more videotape or whatever. And he sees a weird guy outside, like, in the side yard. Now, initially, he didn't think that it was a ghost or nothing. He just thought it was, like, a vagrant or a neighbor or something like that. He just said it was, like, this weird-looking dude kind of in the side of the house. And he's like, and I called out to him, like, hey, what are you doing there? And then he followed him, and he's like, and then I went around to, there was, like, an alley behind the house, and it's like the dude was gone, and I couldn't figure out where he had gone. Now, in the master bedroom, the EVP session continues with more of your standard questions. And then, while Regina and Sarah are sitting on the bed, they said they felt pressure on the bed. They said it felt like a toddler climbing up on it. That's what it felt like. And they both obviously, like, jump right the fuck off, like, oh, no. Now, Regina tells Sarah, she's like, well, if you're scared, you can go. And Regina's like, good, because bye. She just, like, takes off and leaves Regina in there by herself. At this point, the closet door, like, the door starts rattling, and then Regina goes over there like she's going to open it, and then the knob turns by itself, and Regina, probably wisely, is just kind of like, nah, I'm just going to leave that closed, and then she just, like, leaves the room. So she leaves the room and goes back out in the hall, and she's at the top of the stairs, and she sees a guy standing at the bottom of the stairs, and obviously, like I said, it's not one of her team, and nobody else is supposed to be in the house. And she said that she also felt like the whole time she was walking down the stairs, like, after this guy, who are you? What are you doing here? She said she felt like someone was going to push her down the stairs the whole time. Now, she tells Kyle about it. She's like, I just saw, she's like, it was a ghost. It was right there. It was standing right there. And she described him, and Kyle's like, holy shit, I saw a guy that looked exactly like that outside just now, and I just thought it was like a bum or something. I didn't think it was like a ghost. You know what I mean? Well, he said he thought it was a vagrant or a neighbor or something. And, you know, so they said, holy shit, like, that was probably like the same dude, and it's like a ghost. So James, you know, the EVP and photo guy, he's very excited about this. He's very young, like, at least on this show. So he's like, I'm going to get a picture of this shit. So apparently, I don't know, I wasn't real clear about this, but they said that he kind of set up the camera, like, in a mirror or something like that. And then he said that he, when he took the picture, like, he saw the dude for a second. Like, I guess in the camera flash is, I'm assuming, what he's talking about. But he said he kind of felt it, like, run behind him, and he's like, and you could tell that the ghost was, like, not happy about being photographed or about them being there or whatever. So at this point, the team has to leave. They've been there. It looks like they've been there all night because I think they left, like, in the morning when Mike was coming back from work. So they said, well, we need to go through all the evidence we collected, and we'll get back to you in a couple days, and we figure out what's going on. Now, the picture that James took supposedly had a clear ghost in it. Now, the one they showed on the show, like I said, looked pretty impressive, but I don't know what the real one looked like. Probably not that good, because it looked like, you know, a dude. Also, when they listen back to all the EVPs, a lot of the EVPs, well, a lot of the questions they asked, like, the ghost apparently answered them. You know, like Sarah asked, "Are you sorry for scaring me?" And of course the ghost said, "No," like that. And I was like, what a dick. Also, I think that at one point the ghost said something like, "Let me out," which I was just like, "Let you out of where? Where are you?" But, you know, he didn't answer that. But that was another thing that he said, apparently. So, yeah, it was a little freaky. So, Mike is in his house, and they've actually sent over, like, the photos and the audio and everything. So, he's in his house, in the haunted house, like, listening to this shit. And so, he's listening to these EVPs going to be like, oh, no, fuck this. You know what I mean? Which, like I said, you can't blame him.
I don't know what to think of EVPs, people.
I don't either.
I've seen paranormal phenomena. There's no reason to fucking do an EVP. You just hear a fucking voice out of nothing, out of nowhere. Objects being thrown. They're strong. If you gotta get some kind of sensitive equipment around to fucking magnify the sound 5,000 times and shit
to hear something,
then there may not be any damn phenomenon there.
Okay, I've really never heard any.
Yeah.
I mean, other than maybe a couple that were kind of creepy, but the thing about it, though, is that those would be, like, super easy to fake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you were so inclined.
When you see it, strong shit, there's no denying it. You're like, you can't believe it. You're like, fuck, that it's real. You know? Like, what they told us doesn't exist, does exist. Damn, what else exists? Red was like, if this exists, does that mean Bigfoot exists? Does that mean UFOs exist? It causes you to reevaluate everything.
Yeah, but see, I think that, I don't know, you can't be like that, like, right across the board, because then you'd be like, oh, well, if this one thing exists, then everything else exists.
No.
Like,
yeah, ergo, yeah, there's no Loch Ness monster.
That doesn't make any sense.
If there's something like a Bigfoot, it's not in North America.
It's all, those are all, like, yeah, very discrete categories, yeah, of things. Yeah. So I don't think just because one exists, that means they all exist. So after he heard these EVPs, which were apparently really freaky, then he hears noises in the house again. And apparently, he said, something shoved him against the wall, like, really, really hard. And I don't know if this is, because I don't think he said this, but on the reenactment, they showed that it was shoving against the wall so hard that his feet, like, it put his feet up off the floor. You know what I mean? So, I don't know if that really happened or not. But, you know, lifted him off the ground. So, after that happened, he's just like, yep, I'm out. That's enough of that. So, he just basically runs out of the house. And they said the only time that he came back after that was to pack his shit and get the fuck out. Because, yeah, it is, once the ghost starts shoving you into a wall, that's pretty much all through it, I imagine. He ends up getting his company, like, he had put in a transfer, like, to another city. So he got a job in another city and, like, rented an apartment there. Now, after moving out, he actually put the house up for sale, and they said it sold, like, immediately, like, in 3 weeks or something like that, which is crazy. But they didn't have any mention of if the ghost bothered the new people that moved into there, or if it was just a particular thing that happened to him and his girlfriend or whatever, but that was pretty much. So, again, I kind of like these ones. I don't know why, but I guess I kind of like the ones where they don't. I don't like the ones that just have that pat ending where it's just kind of like, oh, we did an exorcism, and it's like, oh, smell of sanctity, you know what I mean? And it's just like we sorted it all out with Jesus and all that. That's, yeah. I don't like that. That's stupid. It's cheesy. But I kind of like these ones where the people, where it just gets bad and bad and the psychic comes and it's like, well, it's probably some haunting shit, but I don't know if we can do anything about it. And then it gets really bad and they're just like, yep, nope, bye. And then, yeah, they just leave. Yeah. Because that seems like that's more like what would actually
happen.
That's
more what happened with us.
Right.
Or it just faded away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's happened on a couple shows too, yeah, where it's just like, you know, after a while, like, it just got less and less.
Yeah, it fades away.
Which to me seems a lot more, because I kind of feel like the ones that are all, like, big exorcism at the end, I feel like there's, like, an agenda there.
Church agenda.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like, I'm more inclined to believe the ones where they just said, yeah, we just couldn't take it anymore, so we just left. Or ones where it just, like, gradually got less until they didn't notice it
anymore. There's a certain kind of paranormal investigator that is also a preacher. They sell books about what happened to them in their haunted house.
Yeah.
And how Jesus saved it. Yeah, I'm Bill Bean. But you know, so was the Warrens were kind of like that, too.
Right, yeah.
They were almost preacher adjacent. Not counting the teenage girl they kept as a girlfriend and all that other shit that they do. But, you know, that's just kind of religious culty.
Yeah.
No, from what I've seen of the paranormal, no religion's going to solve it. It's something outside your control. It's a paranormal phenomenon. You seen it in the house back when it was turning the TV on and opening shit and ringing doorbells and throwing little objects here and there. Could have religion had any play in any of that?
No, that never even crossed my mind, to be honest with you.
They wouldn't be there when the phenomenon was happening because it was very intermittent and it was very brief. It's because I'm older. When I was younger, I could, and I didn't know I was doing it when I was younger, but when I was younger, I could really fucking make a storm, you know, but you need a lot of internal conflict, you know.
And
my
really,
family had been going through a divorce, and I wasn't fucking happy, and it's just like, I was very disciplined, growing up in a military academy, and there's no way to blow off any steam except that, you know, and it made an external enemy that had the effect of binding the family back together in the face of a common foe. But it didn't do anything wrong, really. It didn't do anything I wouldn't have done. Just
like, and it didn't really hurt anybody.
Nope. Just kind of scare you or entertain you. It did entertaining stuff, too. And I'm sure it would give you any narrative you wanted. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to know what it would say, what it was going to say. It was just gibberish. But it probably would have said something eventually. But it would be saying something, the same things that a character out of your dreams would have said. Because there are characters in your dreams that you can't control, and they say and do things that you wouldn't do. But they come from you. They're not an outside force, and that's what a poltergeist is.
See, I always like that analogy because everybody can relate to that. Everybody has dreams where there's like all these random motherfuckers in there.
They're doing things that you wouldn't do.
And they're doing things that you wouldn't necessarily do, and you're just like, but that's still you, though. I mean, your brain generated that, so it's coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, your conscious self is only one part of a whole.
There's all kinds of shit.
There's other versions of you in there, too, and they're all talking to each other.
Rattling around.
Yeah. you're a committee.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, and they've talked about you and everything that you've come up with that you think your consciousness invented. No, they did it as a group. They knew about it even before you thought about it. Your consciousness is actually an illusion that you're in charge. You're not making any of the decisions. The other ones are.
Well, there's a specific part of your brain that makes you feel like you're just one.
Yeah, yeah.
Identity.
Right.
But you're really not. You know? Which is why I'm not... when we did the show about dissociative identity disorder, like about that guy, I don't know if I'm entirely skeptical of it because, you know, the brain can do like some weird shit. And like you said, if you didn't have that regulatory part of your brain turned on that made you feel like one cohesive person,
you'd be a group
then
of people.
I can see how that might happen, like how you might have that.
You'd be a group of
perception.
People, and they would all be in conflict with each other, trying to come to an agreement. Because everything you're doing, even before you knew about it, is kind of disgust. According to what I've read.
Yeah.
And what I've felt.
Well, and even if you, I mean, even most quote-unquote normal people, or, you know, neurotypical people, if you want to call it that, that have a sense of a continuing single identity, even those people are often, like, conflicted. You're usually, like, conflicted, like, you can't decide on some shit. It's like, you know, part of me wants to do this, and part of me wants to do that. You can't, like, decide on shit. You know what I mean?
There's a Skinny Puppy album called Mind the Perpetual Intercourse. It's a badass fucking industrial album. But that's always been a good description of how my mind seems to be. When I'm relaxed, it seems to be a conversation between a couple people. And then you kind of like, if you have to do something, then it becomes cohesive and becomes, you.
Yeah.
Do you ever have that sensation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything you think of, there's somebody else in there checking it and responding to what you thought of. And it's kind of like you're honing on it.
Well, it's a constant back and forth. Yeah. And I mean, I thought most people had that. Yeah. I mean, maybe, unless I'm crazy.
I think most people are like that. And the title of that album is Mind.
Which is a possibility.
Mind the perpetual intercourse. Mind the perpetual conversation. That's what that means. It's just like, yeah, that's what it's like.
Yeah, I'm always feel. I wouldn't go so far as to say I feel like more than one person, but there's definitely like conflicting points of view in there that are constantly like going back and forth.
They're
with
almost
one
like
another.
Different characters in there.
Right. So I definitely do feel like that.
Yeah.
So that's I don't think that's that unusual.
Yeah.
I think most people
some of mine are kind of like Jack Torrance is going. Other ones are like the Venom, going. I made you what you are. That kind of shit, you know.
See, mine aren't quite that bad.
Yeah, some of them are real. That's why I'm scared of the Poltergeist, because that shit gets out of hand, man. It can hurt somebody.
Well, see, but then you told me, because I said to you, I was like, you know, you might get mad at me, like, wing a brick in my head one of these days.
It's more likely that it hurts me.
Yeah, but...
out of, like, self-hatred.
But then you kind of said, oh, you don't have anything to be afraid of. It was like, I don't know, I kind of feel like I
think
it
would probably mostly attack me for not living up to it, or... being a failure, that type of thing. Because some of them in there are just real caustic, man. But they're aimed more at me than anybody else.
Yeah, I get that. Like I said, I have that same thing. It's
like
not
self-criticism.
It's not quite as bad as that. Mine aren't quite as harsh, but they are pretty harsh. But not quite as harsh.
One of them is exactly like Venom.
Yeah.
Which
is why you liked that movie.
I
so
love
much.
That movie. So that's going, that's it.
He's like, I was like, hey, he's like you.
Yeah, there's one of them in there. Basically, I'm protecting you. You'd be nothing without me. You know what I mean? You're a coward. I'll just kind of, it's like that.
Yeah.
But it's just one of the facets in there that's helping form things. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, I kind of feel like most people have that where you have these kind of conflicting. Things it's like, man, I'm alright, I'm awesome, stuff like that, and they're like, no, I suck.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, it's like that, like just constant back and forth, which, you know, probably not entirely healthy, but I do kind of feel
the
like
the Venom one is
like
pure narcissism. It's taking all the credit.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's a megalomaniac, and it's taking all the credit for everything that I've done.
Yeah.
It basically says, no, I did it. You know, it's like that.
I mean, it is still you, technically.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get it.
It's just one of the factions in there. One of the facets.
See, the brain is fascinating.
Yeah,
I'm just fascinated by that kind of stuff. Instead, if I wasn't so old, I might go back to, like, school and, like, be a fucking neuroscientist. I just, like, got so fascinated by that kind of shit. I'm so fascinated by that kind of stuff. Just because it's so weird and we don't, like, understand jack shit about it, really. I mean, even after, you know, we understand a little bit about it, but not as much as we probably should. Considering it's like right there inside our heads and everything, but yeah, so that was pretty much the end of that episode. No big exorcism, no nothing like that. You know, ghost just like pushed him against the wall, and he's just like, yep, moved out, sold the house. They never, like I said, I liked that they didn't impose a narrative on it. They didn't try to figure out who this little kid was, who the guy was that was walking around or nothing. They didn't come up with any story like, oh, he was molesting the little boy and the boy loved cartoons, or you know what I mean. They didn't like come up with any kind of like bullshit story to go along with it. They were just kind of like, we don't know who the fucking ghosts are, okay? You just got ghosts in your house, and that's about the end of the story. So I like that. So this is actually like a really, really good episode, and I'm glad that we finally got around to doing it, and I don't know why we didn't do it earlier.
We
got
to move on to new seasons now.
Yeah, because I think we've covered pretty much everything from, I think, the first four seasons, I think.
We bought
Unless you want to redo some, like Demon Child or something.
We'll leave it on that. We'll leave it on the fans. We'll leave that one on the fans.
I mean, I tend to not want to redo things. I know we redid Haunting of Summerwind, but...
those are the fucking classic episodes. They might need updates, but there's also a bunch of newer episodes. There's some that are only online that we bought.
Yeah,
they're
and we have any
as shit.
And we have any, and like those probably be fun to talk about, honestly.
Because we can bag on those.
Yeah, which sometimes makes for a more fun show. Like, these are fun, too, but these are actually, like, good,
kind
of creepy episodes. They're not, like, cheesy. Not like that mummy one.
Yeah, he's talking to Apep and shit. Was it APEP? Is that the name of that guy?
Yeah, what the fuck guy? I don't even remember now. The one that looked like the alligator god, the Nile alligator.
It's like a Nile alligator god, Egyptian god. I think his name might have been APEP. It's been a long time.
That's just that whole episode. Yeah. That dude was like, I mean, fair play to him. He was on there.
He was trolling.
Yeah.
He was fucking trolling.
But he kept a straight face the whole time. So, yeah. You know, fair play. Yeah. But yeah, so I guess we're going to wrap it up so I can go take a shower and have a snack, and then I got to go to bed soon, but so I can get up early. So Wednesday is our next live stream, obviously, and we're going to do a cool show. I'm excited about what I've been wanting to do this show for a long time, but it never wins in the poll, but this time it won, goddammit. We are doing the Mary Celeste, the OG of ghost ships.
I thought we already did this one.
No, well, we did a show about ghost ships like a long time ago, but I don't remember if we talked about the Mary Celeste on there. If we did, then it was like, it would have been just like a little bit, because I remember we talked about like the Orang Medan, which is not a real ghost ship. It was just like a story that got conflated into a real event. But we talked about like the Joyita or whatever we talked about. But I don't know if we did the Mary Celeste on there. I always thought that needed its own show.
Okay.
Because it's kind of, like I said, it's sort of like the granddaddy of all ghost ship cases, and it's pretty creepy. And to be honest, it's, I'm not really sure I know what happened there.
I have a pretty good
theory. I mean, I have an idea what I think probably happened, but it's still pretty weird.
It had to do with the cargo they were carrying, if you ask me.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. An emergency happened. Yeah.
So So that's the show that we'll be doing Wednesday night about the Mary Celeste. So I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully you guys are too. So thanks for hanging out with us this evening, and we will see you guys again on Wednesday night at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. Good night.